Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
In earnest. So we just hope, we residents of Abuja hopes that things will remain calm ahead of and during the inauguration on Monday.
The installation of Nigeria's president-elect Asiwa Jubola Ahmed Tinubu, the former Lagos State governor, proceeds on Monday.
The fire destroyed the 6th and the 7th floor. And these floors do house three ministries or three government offices. That's for the Ministry of Land.
Malawi investigates mysterious fires in government offices.
So we are looking at opportunities to export the extranets to get a greener pasture or to get a job abroad.
And Uganda Nurses and Midwives Union says the organization is planning to send about 3,000 of its members abroad for better pay. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Nigeria's president-elect Asiwa Jubola Ahmed Tinubu, the former Lagos State governor, is scheduled to be officially installed on Monday. He will take over from outgoing President Muhammadu Buhari, who steps down after completing the 8 constitutionally allowed years in office. The inauguration comes as the election tribunal continues to hear the legal challenge of the outcome of the February 25 presidential contest. Former Vice President Atiku Abubakar from the main opposition People's Democratic Party, or PDP, and former Anambra State Governor Peter Obi from the Labour Party are challenging Tinubu's victory. Meanwhile, the security agencies have warned troublemakers to stay away from the inauguration grounds as officers bolster security ahead of Tinubu's installation. For analysis and expectations, I reached Jide Ojo. He is a columnist for The Punch, a major newspaper in Nigeria.
The expectation is positive. This morning, the Supreme Court dealt with the last of the orders by dismissing the suit by the opposition People's Democratic Party, which has sued the Vice President-elect, Senator Kashim Shettima, for double nomination. With that order cleared out of the way, inauguration has started in earnest, and activities leading to inauguration are already ongoing. And it is expected that every other thing will be in accordance with the plan by the civil authority.
Well, I understand DSS has warned people they've described as troublemakers to stay away from the installation grounds, and that security is going to be tight. Anybody who tries to do anything fishy will be dealt with accordingly. What are you hearing?
Of course, some of the roads have been blocked from this afternoon. The precinct of the Eagle Square, which is the venue of the swearing-in, has been cordoned off from this afternoon. And notice has been sent to the public to avoid coming close to those areas. And it is expected that the police and the security agencies will take this security threat very seriously. Remember, in time past, there was a particular incident in 2010 where the movement for the emancipation of Niger Delta meant bombed the Eagle Square venue of the Independence Day celebration. Since that time, whenever there is an August event of this nature, security is usually watertight.
I understand Atiku Abubakar, after the PDP petition on the so-called double registration was dismissed, has called on his people to remain calm. Are they responding?
Well, I've been out today and everywhere in Abuja and the environment is calm, and we hope it stays so. Atiku Abubakar, former vice president, are on the main challenger to Asiwa Jubola Ahmed Tinubu in the February 25th, 2023 presidential election. He's not new to legal battles. So he has filed suit at the Election Petition Tribunal, which is still on course. And one of the early decisions made this week was the are striking out of the request for live transmission of the proceedings at the Election Petition Tribunal, which in my own opinion was justified. You cannot be doing live streaming of court proceedings. That would be jeopardizing the life of the judges as well as the witnesses. But having said that, the election petition continues while the preparation for inauguration is still in earnest. So we just hope, we residents of Abuja hopes that things will remain calm ahead of and during the inauguration on Monday.
Jide Ojo is a columnist for The Punch, a major newspaper in Nigeria. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja. In Malawi, the police and other security agencies have launched an investigation into the fire that destroyed government offices in the capital, Lilongwe. Information and Digitization Minister Moses Kunkunyu says the administration is not ruling out anything in the inquiry, including possible arson. Local media reported mysterious fire that gutted two floors housing government offices that had held sensitive information. The information minister, however, says some of the sensitive data was backed up digitally, a move some analysts say dismisses speculation that important material was destroyed. For more on the investigation, I reach Information and Digitization Minister Moses Kunkunyu.
The fire destroyed the 6th and the 7th floor. And these floors do house three ministries or three government offices. That's for the Ministry of Lands, that's Lands Registry and Deeds Registry. Then the Office of the President and Cabinet, where we have the Government Contracting Unit, but also the Judiciary, where we have the Community Services Department. And government has instituted an investigation, which is being led by the Malawi Police Service, with support from other security agencies and also the involvement of the key ministries whose departments sit in these damaged floors of the building.
Moses, with some of the documents allegedly destroyed, were there efforts to back them up?
Yes. Most of these documents have a backup. They were backed up digitally, like an example of the Ministry of Lands information. It is all intact because we have the Land Information Management System, and in that one, we have the backup of everything, so there is no cause for worry. Even in the other departments as well, there has been the digitization process that has been going on, and the backup, digital backups are there for the other documents as well. So there is no cause for worry. It's just the physical space that has been affected. But in terms of the information, there is a backup of all that.
Some Malawians are expressing concern. Some are speculating that this could be, you know, an arson. It could be somebody trying to cover up some corruption or something like that. Will the investigation be made public after its conclusion?
Considering where we are coming from, that we've had a history of arson kind of attempts or even some being successful in them in executing, we have seen that there was an issue at the Ministry of Agriculture some years ago. And this has happened in many places, not only in Malawi. And this makes people think that it could be a repeat of what has happened in the past. And that also puts us as government in a position where we cannot rule out any possibility of such, because we are working with people and motives do differ from doing certain things. And that's why government is coming up with this investigation, which is very open a process. And we have made an undertaking to the public that the investigation outcome will be known to the public. And updates, periodic updates will also be provided.
Will there be some form of measures implemented by the government to prevent such from occurring in the future?
Indeed, there are costs that are incurred whenever there is this kind of a thing happening. But backing it all up digitally is the way that we must go, because that is the only way where even if the physical documents are destroyed, we still have a backup. So whatever could be the motive for whosoever can be behind this, should we assume that it's some workmanship of some other dirty mines, that idea, I mean, that purpose or that motive can still not be achieved. So the biggest damage is when the documents are completely lost or the information is completely lost, because that's where we cannot move further. But where we are assured that we have the information well backed up, then it does not, the fire does not really do us much damage. But we are also encouraging the buildings where people are housing sensitive documents, that they should be assessed in terms of the safety of those buildings to house, be it people or sensitive documents, and be certified as safe buildings. That will be one of the recommendations that definitely the team will make at the end of the investigations. But in as far as wanting to make sure that we do not lose a dot of the information, then digitally backing up all the information is the way to go.
Moses Kunkunyu is Malawi's Information and Digitization Minister. He spoke with me from the capital, Lilongwe. The president of the Uganda Nurses and Midwives Union says the organization is planning to send about 3,000 of its skilled nurses abroad to enable them to seek better paying work. Justice Chirop says the leadership of the group is working on agreements with Western and Asian countries to enable them employ Ugandan nurses. This after saying that the government appears to be unable to employ the more than 5,000 nurses the country produces annually. His remarks also followed local media reports that some employment agencies are planning to send nurses to work in the United Kingdom and the Middle East. To learn more about the plans of the Uganda Nurses and Midwives Union, I reach its president, Justice Chirop, in the Uganda capital, Kampala.
We produce about 5,000 nurses annually, and the government employs only 28,000 nurses, and yet we have 68,000 nurses who are only on the street. So we are looking at opportunities to export the extra nurses to get a greener pasture or to get a job abroad. And we have linked up UK and we have linked up USA to make sure that our nurses whom we produce can get scholar jobs abroad.
Somewhere last year, Gender and Labor Minister Ms. Betty Amongi said that they plan to send nurses and doctors abroad who were not employed by the government. But the Uganda Medical Association challenged the plan, saying there's an alarming shortage of medical workers in many public health facilities in Uganda that the government should first address. Doesn't this sharply contradict another health union in Uganda, this plan that you have?
No. Now, Medical Workers Association, actually, for us, we have a deficit of nurses, we have a deficit of doctors. What we are looking at, the country cannot, the wage bill cannot sustain to absorb about 30,000 nurses. We now look at another opportunity and say, if we can take nurses abroad, we would have gained, because we produce more nurses than our country. Now, we are also encouraging the country to meet the WHO ratio, nurse ratio to patient. And the country, because of the wage bill, it cannot reach to that level. And our sustainability of the country, according to African Declaration in Abuja, they declared that in health system, 15% of the budget of the country should go to the health. Now, in our country, we have only 7.5% allocated to the health.
Now, Justice, has the government signed off on this plan or arrangement that you are making or you've made?
Yes, the President of the Republic of Uganda and the government of UK has agreed to export nurses, labor nurses, to UK. But we are extending to USA, we are extending to UK, and we are extending to Australia and Canada. Whoever, which country wants nurses, we can explain. Only that the government has not come out that when do we begin with this. But for us as a union and labor union, we need to begin immediately because we cannot have a degree nurse redundant at home for 2 years and no job. So we need to expose wherever the nurses are needed. We need to expose as a union. But government has not yet. They were debating in the parliament that when do we begin this. But the president and the UK government had already agreed that there will be a need of exporting nurses to UK. But for me, I've opened doors as for other countries like Canada, Australia, and the USA and the UK to nurses to go freely and educate, so long as they get the requirements which they need.
I understand there's also a plan to send some of these nurses to the Middle East. I'm sure you understand that there have been a lot of concerns raised by Ugandans who bring back sad news and sometimes uncomfortable news that they are mistreated.
Yes, that is the truth, because we have been hearing a lot of allegations that the Middle East has been mistreating nurses. But the fact is, I want to clarify this, that those people who go to Middle East, like Saudi Arabia, like Indonesia, Middle East, they go not a professional, but they go as a housemaid.
Justice Chira is president of the Uganda Nurses and Midwives Union. He spoke with me from the capital, Kampala.
According to a recent report from the Intergovernmental Science Policy Platform on Biodiversity and Ecosystem Services, 1 million of Earth's species are at risk of extinction. Hi, this is Rick Pantaleo. Please join my guests and me for the Science Edition of Press Conference USA when we talk about endangered species and what is being done to protect them. Listen for it this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
African students are calling on leaders on the continent and the African Union to expedite solutions to the ongoing conflict in Sudan. This after the students penned an open letter to African leaders, including President Yoweri Museveni, to use organs of the African Union to resolve the crisis. The call came after Sudan's army called for reservists and retired soldiers to re-enlist. The move, some observers say, appears to be aimed at increasing its numbers as the army battles with the paramilitary rapid support forces. For more on the call by the students, Irate Chepkorir Sambu. She is a leading member of the African Students Group.
As the war continued breaking out, people were talking about the war and the numbers of displacement, or the genesis of the war, and, you know, predictions. And as students, a couple of students in the Massachusetts area started with that, came together to find a way to get humanitarian aid into Sudan on their own. So that is the point at which I met some of my other students, colleagues like Tigo, and who thought that, I mean, there's this group dealing with the humanitarian issue. They did not want it to be mixed with any form of activism, so we thought we could also try to send a letter, students who are interested or who would be comfortable with this, send a letter expressing our concern on how this war is affecting the state of education in Khartoum.
Which individuals or organizations does the group think would help bring peace to Sudan, because at the moment the African Union is not yet involved?
That's a very good question, and it's actually annoying to, in a way, that the African Union has not taken up this issue the way it should. The letter was addressed to the African Union and the systems within the African Union, so that is the Peace and Security Council, which is actually the organ of the AU that is supposed to ensure peacekeeping, peace prevention, and conflict resolution, and even intervention. So being African students and being very tired about the way this situation is being handled, I mean, you have negotiations being led by the US and Saudi Arabia, but you have no meeting by the African Union, completely no meeting. And so we said, we are Africans, and this is the African Union. This is still the African Union, the body that has all members of every African country of its members. So we need to tell them to do something about it. We even need a meeting, because Sudan is inside the African Union. And on a very personal note, opposition, I get frustrated so much with the fact that when you look at the laws that the African Union has passed, they're the most robust, especially the peace and security architecture is the most, I think, intricate. It's the best out there. It's very clear. The African Union is the only body that stipulates very explicitly that its member states already can intervene in the situation that a conflict is threatening peace and security on the continent. Even the UN is not that clear, is not that free with interventions.
Chepkorir Sambu is a leading member of the African Students Group. She spoke with me from Massachusetts here in the United States.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bonga flavor to sukus, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clotty, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Samson O'Malley, and that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs and Music from our African collection. It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Samson O'Malley. Hello, Samson.
Hi, Peter. Good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. We begin the sports in Rwanda, where Egyptian giant Al Ahly were crowned champions of the third season of the Basketball Africa League, following Saturday's 80-65 points comfortable victory over Senegal's AS Douanes in the final held at a sold-out BK Arena. The playoffs of the BAL and NBA-backed showpiece brought together 8 teams from 8 different African countries. The Basketball Africa League spectacle was witnessed by President Paul Kagame, his wife, First Lady Janet Kagame, CAF President Patrice Motsepe, NBA Deputy Commissioner Mark Tatum, American actor, producer and comedian Forrest Stephen Whitaker, among others. Amadou Gallo Fall is the president of the Basketball Africa League.
When we first came here in 2012 and found a partner that shared with us the belief that sport and the transformative power of sport could be what we could rely on to move our continent forward. So Rwanda is a shining example, and we are very, very proud of the work we continue to do here. One of the pillars of growing the game of basketball across the continent have always been about providing safe places where young boys and girls can learn the game and move on with the values of the game to become incredible citizens of their countries and of our continent.
And now to athletics. The 2023 second Wanda Diamond League meeting continues in Rabat, Morocco on Sunday at the Prince Mwale Abdellah Stadium. Rivalries will be renewed in Rabat when some of the sport's biggest stars, like Moroccan home favorite Sofiane El Bakkali, will hope to put on the show in his first 3,000 meters steeplechase race since the Diamond League final held in Zurich last year. Sofiane El Bakkali talks of inspiring the next generation of athletes by competing well at home in Rabat.
So it's not an easy task to be hosting such an international meeting so in our country. I'm very happy and very glad. So because I run in European countries, and to bring these athletes is not an easy task. So we have an international big meeting in our country, and I hope that it will carry on like this. And I would like to thank all the stages.
And now to football. The first leg of the CAF Confederations Cup final between Tanzania's Young Africans and Algeria's USM Algiers in Dar es Salaam will be played at the Benjamin Mkapa National Stadium on Sunday. And now to the FIFA Under-20 World Cup, where Brazil scored 2 goals late in the first half to beat Nigeria 2-0 on Saturday to finish top of Group D at the Under-20 World Cup. And that's all for this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Samson. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospects in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. Today, we pay tribute to the passing away of the humongous cotton tree in Freetown, Sierra Leone. In the 1790s, two waves of settlers arrived in their new home, Freetown, and when they got there, the cotton tree was there. It became a landmark and a meeting place for these new settlers who prior to this knew nothing about the African continent, since their far long ancestors were drawn from many areas of the west and central coast of Africa in the hideous slave trade and became slaves to work the plantations in the Caribbean and in the United States. When the American revolutionaries rebelled against the crown in 1776, the British government and some of the royalist owners requested many of the slaves to fight on the side of the British against the American revolutionaries, and they promised them the freedom and land. But when the United Kingdom lost America, they did take many of them to their other areas in Canada, Nova Scotia, but they gave them no land, and many of them felt betrayed. They were soon joined by many free slaves from the Caribbean, also in Nova Scotia. In an attempt to appeal their case, many of them made their way to London to petition the sovereign for their promise. Many of them were poor. So philanthropists like Sharpeville and William Wilberforce formed the Society of the Black Poor. But still, they protested that they need their land. And later on, these philanthropists have a plan. The plan was to send those willing back to the continent of their great ancestors, those willing to go. Earlier, they formed the Sierra Leone Company, which was a commercial company. And the aim was to send them back to Africa for an agricultural enterprise. Earlier, they have gone to the west coast of Africa, and they have managed to get lists from the local chiefs like King Jimmy and King Tom as the new home for these freed Africans. So these were the men and women in the two ways. Though disappointment, they found some sympathy for each other, and the cotton tree became a meeting place for them. We now have the sad news that the cotton tree, the mighty cotton tree, is no more. The official statement was that the cotton tree crashed after a major rainfall last Wednesday. But it may be that it was not just the rainfall of last Wednesday, because the cotton tree, which had been the lifeblood of the people of Sierra Leone For decades, has been slowly decaying. The sturdy roots have been decaying because they have been polluted by the inner rottenness of the roots. And that's why, also for decades, the cotton tree was in life support. So we wish our dear cotton tree, and I'm sure that many, many generations of Sierra Leoneans would have died. And if they managed to open their hearts, you will hear yes written in the hearts, our beloved cotton tree. I thank you.
That was one man's point of view, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs.
And on this segment, a tribute to the legend Tina Turner, who just recently passed away at the age of 83.
Just don't ask me.
How do I do it? How do you look so great?
Oh, that one. I've been trying to find an answer for it for a long, long time. And just to get it out of the way, I'll just tell you that everyone is now going to gyms and exercising and carrying on. And it is said that it's good for your health, all of us yelling. And I've been singing and traveling and dancing for 35 years. So I think that my work has taken care of all of my aerobic classics. So that's the answer to that one, all right? I think I'm a very normal person off stage, I think. I like to live a normal life. I like to drive my car in town. I like to go to the markets. I still like to stay with my feet on the ground because I enjoy something about being independent in that way.
You know, every now and then I think you might like to hear something from us. Nice and easy. But there's just one thing, you see. We never, ever do nothing nice and easy. We always do it nice and rough. But we're gonna take the beginning of this song and do it easy. But then we're gonna do the finish rough. It's the way we do Proud Mary. Rolling on the river. Listen to the story now.
Left a good job down in the city, working for the man every night and day. And I never lost one minute of sleep. And I was worrying about the way that things might have been. They will keep on turning. Oh, the Proud Mary keep on burning. And we're rolling.
Rolling,
rolling, yeah.
Rolling. You don't ask their name. I'm your private dancer.
It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent.
Why you ready there? I home a king when I would see the demon on my bread and then I dream and then you would hear. And she may do nothing so see me just so. To Tumpuma Nim Lupia Betty Yanka. Father the Lumba Nim, this is so bomb is Sumia Casana, me no mean nothing. We are Intina me draw with you. Oh, my men Casacrani will put in me what Tema say.
Debbie and I wash a demo one practical kicker. I'm coming to sign so me bura na me drama my neighbor. I hold my chin, yeah, that was so, yeah.
Crazy, baby, cause I give you my heart and my body. Whenever you need love, call me. I will give it to you 6 in the morning. I'll be your hobby. I will do anything for the body. So I love you, dead, oh, baby, baby. My sweet potato, hey. Order, yeah, woo, wine for me, baby. Oh yeah, yeah. Royal power they connect me. A beauty like a bunch of rose. She say I beauty skillful and a messy. You don't know, say you bust up my brain.
Jennifer Jamie, who I made in this suja. A bin pity for mona when you be a so. Nyemenya ne kane munye ni papa pa wombo me nkomo wote TV ho dana totatoto kobo ni papa pa ho nye dana sisi konfo no chi de dwaman na boni dia anaju de so mo se wodo be di dwa me ma bunte mu aho se pene ja wonka wo hia kumpe we na wopede wope kaya moto a onim nye makoma pe oba ni ni madeyo kame ma me nai get the trimiti se ni kenika. Nya wo ye mi fi ho de me se da chi mi wo bi ka ke wa bo mi piano
That was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we're on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Nicole Peters, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, only a fool tests the depth of a river with both.